when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, we're going to go right back to Fred Leutcher. Just in case you people are tuning in, I don't want to take too much time telling what we've been doing, because just if you will go back to the archives, they'll be working fine. But we have Fred Leutcher, the world's recognized expert on gas chambers and lethal injection by the nations of Canada, the United States, and some states in Germany. We're still in Dachau in Poland, talking where Fred went over there examining evidence for the Ernst Sundell trials about these gas, because Ernst Sundell and Robert Forreson, the father, I guess, of the revisionist historians who are disproving the Holocaust, Fred Forreson being the French doctor, French PhD, I believe he was. Anyway. Fred, we're going back. Fred, as we're going back to Poland and Germany and Dachau, and we're going to talk about how, how Dachau, and back when I was in R&R back during the Vietnam War, you used to get this thing called R&R, rest and relaxation. You go different places. I went to Europe for a while, and I was near Dachau. I never got to go there. I had some friends of mine who were drafted from Memphis who were over in there. I was a medic. But there was supposedly a death camp called Dachau in Germany. And I'll just briefly tell you this. It was a fake that I think Eisenhower was the one that built it up. It was never really a death camp. It was all a whole damn lie. Eisenhower, being the good Jew he was a worshiper. He absolutely loved General Zhukov of the Russian Red Army. He loved Stalin. Anything he hated Germans, Eisenhower did. He said they were beasts. They should all be exterminated. He said that. So Eisenhower built this so-called death camp in Germany, Dachau, Germany. I'll get Fred to talk about that. And Fred was also going to mention about how difficulty it is to cremate one to two people a day, how difficult it is to gas people with gas, etc. And keep in mind, people, we'll run out of time in just a minute, but we're going to bring in Fred back on the 25th of February, and he can bring back with his assistant, Mona, too. So continue on, Fred. Let's go back there. And I think we're talking about how the difficulty involved in cremating these people. We probably got about 6 minutes to go, something like that, 5 to 6 minutes. So tell what you can in about 6 minutes, if you want, about the difficulty of cremating people, because supposedly the Germans cremated 6 million people. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, cremations take place in what's called a retort. And a retort is a portion of a furnace that cremates one person. Most of the retorts had cremated two people, so they were two-man retorts. They consisted of a furnace that was generally run by coal or by coke, and you put the bodies into a cylinder that's cut in half. And the cylinder is slid into the retort, and the door is closed, and it takes 3, 4, 5 hours, depending upon what your fueling is and where you are and how long the furnace has been running, to cremate the person. The German locations, at the death camps, or so-called death camps, where they were doing all this, and that's the big joke about it, it took 2, 3, sometimes 4 hours, because these retorts were so small, they weren't large enough. They weren't made for mass production or mass cremations. They were rather small, and they took a while to do the cremations. And as a result, you know, they talk about putting two bodies in at the same time, or three bodies, they cut them up. And, of course, that's nonsense. You can't put more than one body in. If it's going to take you 2 hours to cremate one body, you put two bodies in, it's going to take 4 hours. And what people also don't understand is cremation is not really, it's not really cremating or burning. It's dehydrating. You dry the body out completely, so all you have left is bones and teeth. And after you do that, then you have to take the bones and you have to put them in a bone crusher. Now, years ago, the Germans used a mortar and a pestle because that's all they had in those days. We use a machine that actually crunches them and crushes them today. So
I didn't know that. So in other words, the fire does not burn up the bones. I didn't know that.
There's always a lot of bones left. That's the joke. They talk about throwing these ashes in the ground, but there would have been bones with them too. Because our modern furnaces don't cremate the bones. So these old-fashioned furnaces that the Germans were using, they certainly wouldn't. They had more bones left than we do. But at any rate, it was interesting because I had to learn how the cremations were done in order to understand what they had there to do them. And you asked about aerial photographs, and of course we took a lot of aerial photographs of the camps during the war. Also, the German military took aerial photographs during the war. And there was an engineer, a Canadian engineer, his name is Ball. He compiled all these photographs, and these photographs are available in a book that he published. It's online, so the photographs are available.
Great. What's the name of that book?
I think it's called Photos of the Alleged Death Camps or something of that nature. It's been published under two or three different names.
Okay.
But if you put in Ball and photographs, you'll be sure to find it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
At any rate, these tell us a lot of things about the alleged gas chambers and the alleged crematories because at Auschwitz proper, as you know, there's a big chimney there that they've been arguing about for years, and it's never been connected to the... It's never been connected to the building. Now, the exterminationists say there are pipes that go underground. Now, there are reasons that I can't get into now that are too complicated, but it all has to do with upflow in furnaces. You can't go down and up. You have to go up from where the fire is.
That makes sense. I read you. That's the big point. Absolutely. But I'm not an engineer, but that would, I mean, I've been around enough wood stoves to know that. But go ahead, Terry.
So at any rate, if we look at the aerial photographs, we can see each two-man, I'm talking about two retort, two-body crematory furnaces. It's one furnace that takes two bodies. Each has its own vent on the roof so that alleged big furnace was probably, I don't know who built it, was probably built by the Russians. Because they figured that they needed something to show what was at these locations. But every single one of the retorts had their own vents. So therefore, that big chimney did absolutely nothing. And we also have photographs of all of the camps, and we can determine this is one of the issues that some of the people now are saying that there were alleged executions at the transit camps, and I won't get into a list of the transit camps because we don't have time. But they said that they've all been torn down so that it doesn't matter anymore. Nobody can go investigate them. But the bottom line is this: they are torn down, and all that's there is a plaque that says 6 million Jews were burned here or killed here or what have you. But the point is, we have, Ball has photographs of them all, and we can look at them. There were no retorts. There were no barracks. There was very little there at all. They were railheads, and what they did is they had lists of people that were required at various at the various concentration camps in Poland. And when the train pulled in with all these Jews and Gypsies and whatever these undesirables that they took out of the various countries, they pulled in. They had a list of people. We need two cobblers here. We need two plumbers here. And they put them on the right train going to the right camp. So basically, all they were is that, and they only had a small facility to hold people, a few people overnight if they were waiting to catch tomorrow's train. But we know that there was no large groups of buildings there where they could have had gas chambers and where they could have had crematories.
Because that's why those photographs are so important, so pertinent. Absolutely.
Yes. We can look.
Fred,
at
we'll be going to a commercial any minute. We'll be going to a break any second, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't want to interrupt you, but I just want to let you know. So I'm letting our audience know you will definitely be coming back, God willing, if you agree, on the 25th of February, same hour. We'll carry you as long as we need to. But continue on until we run out of time, Fred.
I'll be here.
Okay. That's great. I'm really looking forward to that. Like I said, we'll be going to a break any second. But and also Mona, I want her to come back too, because by that time, after we wound all this down, Mona can ask questions and things that we haven't covered. There's that break. I knew it was coming any second, Fred. I wanted to let you know, give you a heads up that it was coming. Thank you so much, Fred. You've done great work for your people. For the white people of the world, the Christian people of the world, defend against this onslaught of this international Jewish Satanism. Thank you so much, Fred. People, hold your seat. We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Small Business Tech Guys is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguys.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguys.com.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
Hello, Blood River Radio listeners. Little Eddie has disappeared. I'm going to bring up something on a very different topic than what he was talking about. He did a good job, and Fred did a great job. But talk about what's going on right now, which is Black History Month. And I don't think we should forget this, because a couple of black female representatives have had to pay a heavy price for talking about the Eternal Jews. Ilhan Omar from Minnesota. She was elected, I think, in 2019. She's actually originally from Somalia. She made a comment about Benjamins and that the U.S. was hypnotized by Israel. So she's not going to be available. They're not going to let her be on the Foreign Affairs Committee because she's she's committed the ultimate crime of so-called anti-Semitism. And then you also have, in the past, we had the six-term Democrat-Republican from Georgia, Cynthia McKinney, who also got into a lot of hot water with the Jews. And, in fact, I'm proud to say that in 2008 and 2009, she actually made trips to try to break the Gaza blockade. And her ship was actually attacked. She ended up in jail and was deported back to this country. So there's some...
Absolutely, we'll cover that. We're going to play that that clip when we come back. I'll introduce it. And you know,
You're on now.
I'm on the internet. Hello, all your people. Anyway, but you know, Somalia is right next to the border of South Memphis. If you leave South Memphis, you go into Somalia. So I should know that lady. You know, cause where I grew up, Somalia didn't have jack on South Memphis. But anyway, hey, Monica's there, I believe.
Yes, I am.
Oh,
good day.
It's good to have you back on, little sister. Hey, we'll play a little clip when we come back. I'll just introduce this clip, and it kind of sets the tone of what we just got through talking about, and everything. This thing with Ilhan Omar, I don't care what it is. It always leads back to the Jew. They're behind every damn thing. And people say, well, I guess they cause everything. Well, yes, they do. Anyway, so we'll play that clip. And then we'll go back to which I want. I think Nancy, Monica, you probably know that outline that Nancy has. We'll just let y'all rip and roll. I'll briefly say, we did blah 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 first hour. You know, the people just tuned in. We'll bring you back to 25th, et cetera. I'll make it real brief. We'll play that clip because it all ties together. I think y'all will like this a little sound bit. It's set to the tune of an old Vietnam anti-war song, but I don't know who did. I don't know the group. I never was very good at music. My oldest sister knew every musician that ever lived, every song there ever was. I liked some music. I never was a music buff like she was. I was always into hunting and fishing, stuff like that, raising dogs, playing football. Anyway, that's a great outline you got, Nancy. I really appreciate you doing that. And Sister Monica, you just dive in anytime you want to. It's going to be y'all two are going to be primary doing this, and I'll just dive in as y'all lead me to. I was looking for a thing Mr. Buddy sent me, and I think I sent it to Nancy, and it talked about the head honcho of the CDC
theories.
Yeah, I was looking for that.
I didn't know the CDC was involved in conspiracy theories, but apparently they are.
Yeah, she said they certainly are, because she came out and said that the white people, especially white people that refuse to get, she didn't say black people. She didn't say Mexicans, yellow, brown, et cetera. She said that white people that don't get vaccinated need to be eliminated, need to be done away with. Let's see. I was looking for that.
Also wanted them replaced with aliens or new immigrants. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The same way, that's the same thing General, what was his name? General
Morgenthau.
General Sherman during the Second World War. He said they need to exterminate all the Southerners, and get rid of them and bring in Eastern Europeans, something like that. I'm looking for that thing Mr. Buddy sent me. Damn, I've got to get my printer fixed. I'm just really dead, hamstringed without that dadgum printer, man. I can't find it. I'm hoping I can find it. Golly Moses, maybe I can find it and send, because I think I sent it to you. I might have sent it to both of y'all.
So, Eddie, did you want Lizzie to play the audio clip? She's just sent a little message saying it's just under 3 minutes.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I was looking at my computer. We're looking at hers. I have a computer over here. The clip is that. Yeah, we'll play that when we come back. Yeah. And I'll just introduce it because it ties in. Y'all will like it. Your ears are probably better than mine. I hear music and stuff. I don't hear words real well. Too much gunfire. I've had you wouldn't believe the trauma my ears have been subjected to. Anyway, let me go in here. Let's see. I'm looking for that daggum clip. We probably won't need it, but I would like it. It has some great stuff on it, man. I'm not kidding you. But, yeah, we play that clip when we come back, and I'm repeating myself. Then we'll go to that outline that Nancy's got.
If we have a couple of minutes before the bottom of the hour here, I'll just provide a little comment segueing from what Fred Leuchter talked about in the first hour and a quarter. And just to say, you know, I've got the book in front of me called The Great Holocaust Trial. And that's a book by Michael Hoffman. And this is the 25th anniversary edition. So it's really the updated one after the second trial had taken place. And then again, they did put out another edition a number of years later. And you know, you had mentioned several times that, yeah, he went over as a believer. And they took a gamble, like Faurisson and Ernst Sandl really took a gamble sending him over. Mm-hmm. Because really the gamble rested with the issue of Leuchter's fundamental integrity. Was he going to testify to the truth of what he found, or was mm-hmm. he going to be subjected to the pressures of, do I want to keep my job and, you know, just falsify the evidence? So I just wanted to put that out there.
I insist that you do that.
Then, yeah, I just flipped to another page in this book, fantastic book. I think everybody should read it, The Great Holocaust Trial by Michael Hoffman. Anyway, just about during the second trial.
Cover that.
The prosecutor's star witness was Christopher Browning, because the one who had come in the first trial, Raul Hilberg, he didn't want to come back because he didn't want to have to do all the work to study all the questions and answers of the first trial, because he was so afraid they might entrap me by pointing to any seeming contradiction. So why would he be so afraid of making any seeming contradictions if he was just telling the truth? Wouldn't he still mm-hmm. be just telling the truth? So that's very telling. Yes. That's very telling. Anyway, this Browning character who was there the second time around, Christopher Browning, he was the quote-unquote expert on gas chamber exterminations. But he confessed that in the course of 17 years of his research, he had never seen a homicidal gas chamber, nor had he ever seen a technical plan for a homicidal gas chamber. He had never looked at more than one of the hundreds of aerial reconnaissance photos taken over Auschwitz in 1944. He had never looked at it. See, he had to testify to that because he was under oath, and he testified to that under the very skillful cross-examination of Doug Christie. So Auschwitz was not his area of research, Professor Browning said, but he was their star witness. So if that's all they could come up with, that's pretty good, isn't it? It's pretty good.
I'd say so.
Here's another thing. Are we heading up to the break? Because I've got another point I could bring out here.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say they're so used to just being able to say any damn thing and no one kept challenging them. That's what they're. But go ahead, Monica. I didn't mean.
Yeah, Browning also subscribed to Hilberg's mind reading theory regarding the means by which historians know that Hitler ordered the exterminations. He said, "Okay, quote, my own understanding would emphasize greater the kinds of initiatives and signals coming from Hitler that were understood by those under him to be orders. They had reached the point where they were receptive to signals. Some of the documents are complex. I would agree that documents can be read in different ways. Certainly the lack of a written order or an ability of historians to point to a particular conference or date has been evoked. We cannot point to a particular meeting or particular words. We do not know those. There are gaps in the evidence." I mean, this is the kind of thing that came out in these trials. It's great, actually. People should find out what was actually said in those trials.
You definitely need to cover that, Monica. You definitely need to cover that, dear. You really do.
proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Dave Collins. President Biden says he authorized a Chinese surveillance balloon to be shot down days ago.
After days of watching it float across the United States, the U.S. shot down a Chinese surveillance balloon off the coast of South Carolina today.
I want to compliment our aviators who did it, and we'll have more to report on this a little later.
President Biden says he gave the order to shoot it down on Wednesday, but military fears of the balloon coming down on a highly populated area led to the delay in shooting it down until it was over water. I'm John Schaefer.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says the U.S. will collect the remains of a Chinese surveillance balloon. On Twitter, he condemned China's president for his brazen incursion into American airspace, as well as praised Biden's leadership. Millions living in the Northeast are under wind chill alerts. Forecasters say a polar vortex sitting directly over Maine will create wind chills of 30 below zero in some parts of the region. Officials warn that could cause frostbite in as little as 10 minutes. A number of cities across the state have opened up public warming shelters. Good news from the CDC on monkeypox.
The CDC reports the number of new daily cases is dropping drastically, hovering in single digits compared to 450 new cases a day back in August. More than 30,000 Americans were diagnosed with monkeypox during last year's outbreak, including 23 who lost their lives.
That's Lance Pry reporting. Americans are racking up a record amount of credit card debt. A new report from TransUnion puts the total at $930 billion in the fourth quarter of 2022. That's an 18.5% jump from the prior year. The average credit card balance rose to just over $5,800 as consumers increasingly rely on plastic to pay for food and rent. This is USA News.
The inventor and CEO of MyPillow is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow towels. Towels that work. I know, it's mind-blowing. Towels that actually dry you. The six-piece towel set includes two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right now you can receive a six-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code USA. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the radio listener special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the six-piece set of MyPillow towels, just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, and enter promo code USA or call 800-951-8175. That's MyPillow.com, promo code USA.
Tell you something, boy, if I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I hope that you got an education for that first hour with Fred Leutcher and all the work he's done. And like we said before, I'll just repeat myself, that we're going to bring him back again on the 25th of February to finish up his work, the great work, the Leutcher Report. I have a copy of that in my safe he sent me. I've gone through some of it, but a good bit of it is this engineering lingo, a lot of math and stuff like that that I didn't understand all of it. But anyway, people, you've heard me say, it's to quote Dave Gehary of Money Tree Publishing, it's always Jews all the time. I don't care what problem we're talking about nowadays, modern times, these days. If you reverse engineer, if you go back to the source of the problem, it's always a Jew, always, because just like the Bible says, like Jesus Christ said in St. John 8:44, he said, and he's talking to the cream of the crop Jews, the Pharisees and the scribes. He says, here's why you hate me, because I come from my father, God. He said, and you are of your father, the devil. That's what he told them. So we're going to get ready to play a little audio clip, and it's set to the this a song, an old Vietnam War, Andy War song. I remember it well. I don't remember the group that sung it. But this is going to be a clip, and it's talking about our enemy in war. So, and it's going to segue. It's going to tie our first and second hours together. So go ahead, Miss Sweet 16 Lizzie, and play that clip.
Something evil here. Who it is perfectly clear. There's Jews on TV over there. Says make war on the Russian bear. You gotta stop, white man, look and see. Jews are planning World War III.
U.S. military officials say U.S. fighter jets intercepted four Russian bombers and two Russian fighter jets Monday. The aircrafts were spotted off the coast of Alaska.
Jew books say we have no worth, that they will one day rule the earth. U.S. and Russia's in the way, so the Jews hate our countries and must make them both pay. We gotta stop, white men, look and see. Jews are playing good for free.
Speaking about Russia more generally, it is a very weak country, and the strength comes from projecting aggression. It is kind of a giant on rusted legs.
Some of our men can see the truth. The Jews' own words are the proof. Those who fight against this fate, by Jews their own people are told to hate. We gotta stop, white men, look and see. Jews are planning war for free.
The United States aids Ukraine and her people so that we can fight Russia over there and we don't have to fight Russia here.
Parasites burrow deep. Jews through our land, they do creep. We gotta make them all leave. Then make a mushroom out of Tel Aviv. We gotta stop, white men, look and see. Jews are planning World War III. Stop.
The Japanese bombing Pearl Harbor was an attack on our country. 9/11 was an attack on our country. When Russia interfered with our elections, that was an attack.
Well, dear Blood River Radio people, I think that little clip, I kind of like that, and it covered a lot of the bases. It certainly did. White men stop. These Jews are planning World War III. You know, they talked about, you know, they gave you a little clip there about the United States military intercepted the four Russian bombers off the coast of Alaska. But they don't give a damn about that that balloon from Red China that was floated all over the United States for about a week. And they finally shot it down today. If we get time, we'll talk about that. But here's the thing. They got to let the damn balloon from Red China going all over creation, all over the United States, dropping maybe bioweapons. Who knows what they did? But the United States doesn't care about them because probably Russia, a lot of people say that Russia has bought up the United States. Well, I tell you, maybe so. They probably have. They bought a lot of farmland, a lot of industries, a lot of things like that. But if you look. Look who's been in bed with the Red Chinese forever and ever. Amen. The same people who were in bed with the old Soviet Union, the Jews that created, the Jews created a communist Russia, went in and overthrew the Russia, white Russia in 1917, 1918, the so-called First World War, turned it into a Jewish country, a Jewish communist country. They're fighting. They have dealt with Red China the whole time, even when there was embargoes on Red China, embargoes on Russia, the Jews have always played middleman. They're behind this war in the Ukraine. That tape was hitting it all. It's just never ever stopped. And that tape, they name the Jew. It's always Jews all the time. Sister Nancy, what do you think about that?
Well, I think you're right about that. I think Monica wanted to talk about something to do with the trial in Canada. She was following up on that with someone named Browning, I believe.
Christopher Browning. So just to continue on from what he actually said in the trial regarding this order that supposedly Hitler gave to exterminate 6 million Jews or to exterminate all the Jews. And of course, they always say 6 million. That's that cultish number that we've all heard about that happens to have been talked about for decades before World War II as well. Anyway, so this Christopher Browning was the star witness for the prosecution side in the 1988 trial in Toronto, the trial where Ernst Zundel was facing the Inquisition for daring to republish this little booklet called Did 6 Million Really Die? So regarding this order and the mind reading aspect of it, that's where I had left off before the break. He said, we do put together the evidence in as best a manner as we can. It will involve measuring probabilities, as I have said, in this question of a Hitler order. It is a question of probability. He goes on to say, Browning goes on to say, the extermination orders were buried within German bureaucratic language, which we characterized as euphemisms. Euphemisms. Mm-hmm. So this is what this Holocaust narrative and this, you know, the Germans, you know, or Hitler, big bad Hitler, ordering the extermination of the Jews is based on probabilities and euphemisms. And this is in the trial. Now, I just want to remind people, if they haven't already heard this, what the judge said at the end of the trial. He said, literally, this is on the record, the truth is no defense. That was said in Toronto. Now, in Germany, after, you know, years later, when they met, three countries conspired to get Ernst Zundel deported. Like, he had been living in the States after these Toronto trials. Sometime later, he moved to Tennessee with his wife, Ingrid Rumland.
Rimland.
Exactly. Sorry, I'm just getting the first and last names all tied up together there. But anyway, they were trying to live a peaceful life in Tennessee on their beautiful property there when armed thugs, i.e. the police, came and basically kidnapped Ernst Zundel and by trickery did this and sent him back to Canada. That's where he spent the 2 years in solitary confinement and wasn't able to face his accusers because they didn't even tell him who his accusers were. This is years later, right? It's after 9/11, so they had new laws where they could just do that to so-called terrorists, but people whose speech they don't like. Then he was finally deported to Germany. Then he was in a trial there. And the judge, I'll just fast forward to the end of that trial, because there's lots of stories about that. But the end of the trial, the judge there, and this was reported in the mainstream newspaper, he said, it doesn't matter if the Holocaust happened or not. What matters is that the law says that you cannot question or deny it. And you broke the law.
That says it all.
It does say it all. So the truth is no defense. The truth is no defense, and it just matters that you broke the law. So those two judges saying those things, you know, that shows us where.
People will be right back after this quick break.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas. like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
This is Attorney Jason Ruff, General Counsel of the Knights Party, based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
God bless you, dear Blood River Radio family. I was just telling, by the way, I'd like to say again, happy birthday, little Lizzie. She's sweet 16. She certainly was. She was 16. I think she told me January the 18th. Is that right, Lizzie? She was sweet 16. I think she's a little bit shy, but, you know, I really am too. I'm really shy. But anyway, happy birthday. If y'all will, in the audience, if you can send, I don't know how to do it, but just think about little Lizzie. She's doing a fabulous job. She's only 16 years old. She's running this board like a pro. I was just saying that, you know, Cameron was the starting quarterback for our board, but I think he's been beat out by his little sister. I don't think he's ever going to be able to regain that starting quarterback position. But anyway, she's 16 years old. And listen, we were talking during the break. Like I said, I hate to correct little baby sister Monica on one thing. She said there was three countries conspired together, Canada, the United States, and Germany, to convict together to capture Arsenal. But that may be true on paper, but in reality, it was one group, one country. They're the country of Israel and the tribe of Judea. They are the ones that would hound him. It doesn't make a damn what country you are in the West. It can be hell, even probably Mexico. It could be New Zealand. It can be Australia. It could be France, even Poland. Not so much Poland, Spain, you name it. The daggum Jews, the Christ-killing Jews, the Jews that said, give us Barabbas, to hell with Jesus, crucify the sucker. We don't want him. Let his blood be on our head and the head of our children. That's the people that conspired, and they were using, they were just like they always do, they used the Shabbos Goy. The Shabbos Goy whipping boy of the United States, the Shabbos Goy Canada, and the Shabbos Goy Germany. They were using them as a front to get Arsenal, because they didn't want to get their hands dirty. But their hands are dirty, and in the end, they are going to pay a very dear price. They are going to burn in hell forever and ever and ever and ever. Back to you, Sister Monica.
Okay. I really would like to talk about a woman named Rosemary Rohrbach. She lived in Toronto for many, many years, the bulk of her life, really. But she was born in Germany in, I believe, 1940. So really she was, oh yes, it was. Because she says that the night she was born, they were actually bombing, the bombs were dropping all around her. She was born in Cologne, Germany. And she just died recently, like a few days ago, January 27th, in fact. And I just re-listened to a story that she told on video when Diane King went to Toronto and has that, and that's on the Europe Renaissance website. That's Michael Walsh's website. And he republished that interview by Rosemary Rohrbach. And I've met her personally, and a wonderful woman. But anyway, I'll just tell you a little brief story about the Jews in Germany, because we're on the subject, and this is really important. So everybody has this impression that Jews, all of them were rounded up, sent to the camps, and exterminated. Of course, when they think that and say that, they forget about all the survivors who are still getting reparation money, and you know, there were so many of them getting all the reparation money forevermore, right? But that, put that aside. There, she says that in Cologne, there were lots and lots of Jews living there. It was kind of like a hub for Jews within Germany. Just like in Canada, I would say Toronto is a hub, and Montreal, lots of Jews there too. Anyway, she and her older sister, I think it was, or brother, they were evacuated, as many children were evacuated out of the cities during the war, because the cities were being bombed. And this is a reminder to the audience, the cities where there were, even where there were no military targets, were being bombed on purpose, deliberately, by the Allies so that they could kill as many German civilians as possible. That was their deliberate strategy. This needs to be said. Yes. So anyway, Churchill, many children. Go ahead.
I was going to say, this is what Winston Churchill said. He said he wanted to barbecue as many Germans as possible. General Eisenhower, that wonderful American, said that the Germans were animals. He said that we need to get rid of them. He said the Germans were animals. Yeah, go ahead, Sister.
Yes,
Martha.
Exactly. And the policy was really to get rid of Germans in general. They didn't care who led the country, whether it was a Jesuit or a, you know, the nicest guy on earth or a Hitler. They didn't care. They wanted to do away with the Germans, and that was their stated policy, and many, many, many documents verify that. Anyway, so they were evacuated, the mother and the young baby and sibling. They were evacuated out into a small village in the countryside, which east of Cologne, in a region that later became part of East Germany. When they came back years later, at the end of the war, their building happened to still be standing, which is quite remarkable because Cologne was just absolutely flattened by the bombing. But their building was still standing, and there had been Jews living in their building, and they were still there. And guess what else? They stole, and this was witnessed, there were witnesses who told them who stole their prized possessions, their prized furniture, even out of the barricaded, you know, they had barricaded their home before they left. But these Jews had stole this beautiful furniture while they were evacuated, trying to escape the bombing. And they actually confronted them and got the furniture back. So this was absolutely true that these Jews stole their furniture. So not only did they not go to any camps, they were unmolested during the whole war. They were just still there. But they also stole from the Gentiles, the Germans who had left. I mean, this is just, it makes me actually just about want to throw up. It is so sick how inverted everything is. And yet the Germans are forevermore the guilty ones and the evil ones. And yet, and she says there were lots and lots of Jews who were completely unmolested, who were just still there. So how does that add up with the official story? I'll just pause there for your comments.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Well, I would just say that my understanding, too, is that many Jews were able to leave Germany before anything happened, really. Some of them probably, they were allowed to leave. They were not held back. And, you know, the thing that should be questioned are these people that have been in two or three death camps and they're still alive to talk about it.
It is a joke, isn't it? I mean, if it wasn't so serious, it is really a joke. And, you know, some of them have these fantastical stories, like ingesting the family jewelry and then seeking it out of their own excrement every day and doing it over and over again for the years of, just the most ludicrous stories. Or, you know, what was that? Ilse Koch or whatever her name was, that she had particularly nice skin, so they wanted her for the making the lampshades out of, but somehow she escaped that too. And she escaped, I don't know, many times. Of course, everybody that you talk to met Mengele, the famous or infamous doctor. Everybody you talk to, any surviving Jew, met him, and he had picked them to do some experimentation on. But somehow they all seem to be very healthy when they tell their stories. And, you know, I don't know, Mengele must have had many, many clones, because I'm telling you that the number of people who met him and were, you know, singled out by him, it's just incredible.
You know, something I like to bring back up, and we say, you know, we always talk about solutions. We also talk about how we have to repeat things over. And to quote my little sister Monica, a lot of people say, well, you don't want to repeat yourself. You don't want to go over that. Well, my little sister Monica said that her other brother Alfred said that Coca-Cola has told us a million times how wonderful Coca-Cola is. It's the best drink there is. They tell us that over and over and over. Well, humans, in my being a human, I assume a lot of other people are like me. You have to do things by repetition. Sometimes mm-hmm. you hear things and it just doesn't sink in. So I would like to say a few things that we've said before, but it just needs to be bored into. And that's in, I think it was 1933, way 6 years before that one shot was fired for the Second World War. Between Germany and the so-called Czechoslovakia and way before Germany and Russia, that the International Judea of the world, the International Judea, they declared a war on Germany. We talked about this, but it needs to be talked about again. There's newspapers you can get. I used to have one here until I gave it to Lee Cochran, rest his soul. But it was full, you can see, full-page ads for International Judea, declares war on Germany, economic warfare. They were boycotting German goods through their money and their political power. They tried to force newspapers to not advertise German goods. They were forced grocery store chains, supply chains not to carry German goods, not to trade German goods. And we're almost about out of time, but I'd like to also have this links into the so-called transfer agreement. Mentioned this. I also used to have a book called The Transfer Agreement. It was written by a Jew of all people. By his name, last name was Black. I gave that to Lee Cochran. We trade books. But it talked about, I'll try to make this brief because we're going to a break in a second. The International Judea made a deal with Hitler and the German government before the war even started to get the Jews out of Germany, to go from Germany to Palestine, to set up the so-called modern state of Israel. And see, it was a symbiotic relationship because the Germans did not want the Jews there in Germany because they owned every damn thing. They had Hitler, like Hitler said when he came back after the First World War, everybody that had a job of any kind was a Jew, especially in any type of government job, just like it is here in the United States now. Any kind of a federal government job you see, or de facto government job like Memphis Light, Gas, and Water, the telephone company, the post office, it's always a Black. It's always a Black. And 7 times out of 10, it's a Black female. Was it in Germany? It was Jews. And they owned every damn thing after the First World War because they had all the damn money. Just like Miss Monica and Miss Nancy said, they worked. They didn't, you know, they didn't suffer World War II. They didn't suffer that way in World War I. So, getting back to this International Judea, they made a deal with Adolf Hitler and the German government they were going to work together to get the Jews out of Germany to go to Palestine. The German government actually gave them money. They let these Jews, these poor molested Jews that were exterminated, they let them take all their art, their goods they could carry, all their money, and plus money that the German government gave them to take them to Palestine. They were aided. They were given weapons by Stalin and the communists. The communists were aiding them. Many Jews from the Soviet Union went to Israel. Well, what do? After they made these great deals with Adolf Hitler, they stabbed Adolf Hitler and the Germans in the back. That's one thing we don't need to forget, y'all. Hope I didn't interrupt too much, but well, there's
no,
the break, y'all.
Good. There was a coin to commemorate this Havara agreement. There was a coin that had the swastika on one side and the Star of David on the other side, I believe.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned the next break. We need to talk about that in the third hour. You're absolutely right. Well, people were transitioning into the third hour. It just seems like I'm in a time warp. We'll be right back, folks. Go get you some coffee. We'll be having a break for a couple of minutes.